And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Hear that podcast growling, made and angry. Hear that co-host shouting, it's Daner and Jay.
This episode of Hear That Podcast Ground is brought to you by Visa Network, working for everyone, working for you. Paul Ener Jr. and Jay Morrison of The Athletic. Excited to be with you. What's up, Jay?
I'm alive. My body clock is back to where it should be. Ready for Steelers Week.
It is Steelers Week. And a very unique Steelers Week where the Steelers are the plucky underdog. And the Bengals are big, bad bully who talked crap after beating them up last time. It's like many things this year, this is quite the change of pace.
Yeah, it really is. I know we just got Tyler Boyd on Sunday postgame. I'm hoping we get him on Wednesday to kind of go back and revisit that they quit quote from after the first game.
You better believe that that is posted all over the Steelers lock. That is not something that they would forget. And they're a very different team this time around. And they have found themselves a little bit offensively. This will be a week where we will closely monitor their health defensively. T.J. Watt, Minka Fitzpatrick. Is it possible the Bengals could go through a season and managed to miss T.J. Watt twice? I don't know. We'll see. He may play, but we'll be monitoring that. And the Steelers have a bunch of health issues as they have all year. So they almost pulled off a miraculous comeback on Saturday night in a wild game against the Chargers, but the Chargers end up winning. So you have all four teams in the AFC North are over 500, and they're playing each other this weekend. It is a big, big weekend for the AFC North, so we're going to dive into that. We're going to spend some time here today talking about the North, the makeup of it, the lay of the land for all these teams, and where the Bengals fit in that mix. And obviously, this discussion will sound very different next Sunday night after these games get played, because it's a big week for this division. We're going to talk a little bit about defense, a little bit about health, a little bit about penalties. Jay's got stats, of course. I have a growler bet that Jay is going to be feeling good about himself, as he should, and some other fun things to discuss. But first, I do want to remind everybody this week, our Black Friday deal, best deal of the year. This is the one. All year, best chance to get in if you're not a subscriber to The Athletic. Hopefully you are. If you are, thank you. If you are not, our promo is going on right now. You can go to Hear That Podcast Growling on the site, the landing page, athletic.com/hearthatpodcastgrowling. $1 a month for 12 months. It's the best deal of the year. We'll have it going on all week. You can go on any of our stories, too, if you want to go in there also and subscribe, and you'll have everything for a year. So we highly recommend you doing that. If you've ever thought about subscribing, not sure if you want to subscribe, this is the time to do it. Jay, we've got a little bit, not a ton of news. I would say that, you know, Zach Taylor said he loved the way Akeem Adeniji played at right guard, so he'll be staying put. I would, you know, that feels like it's settling itself a little bit. I think you could see Adeniji maybe regressing at some point and them having to consider some things. Obviously, injuries always in play. But right now, I think through the two games he's put together and the direction he's trending, I think they, you know, you might see him here for the duration.
Yeah, I kept wondering why they kept running right, because that's where most of the issues were. You know, I wrote about how they had all those negative runs and they stuck with the run, and so much of the struggles were going to the right where Adeniji was. And, he got that sorted out. He was great. If you look at his Pro Football Focus numbers, you listen to Zach, he was really good in pass protection, and that's where they need the improvement. So yes, it was it not a debut, because he started, that was his second start, but it was a big leap from his first start. And it does, barring injury, it feels like he's going to be that guy for the rest of the season. Suofilo's still working his way back. He's doing some rehab work, but even when he's 100% healthy, I think we see Adeniji start the rest of the season at right guard.
Yep. That will be the case. Evan McPherson spoke with us yesterday. And he's the first player in NFL history to have 6 50-plus yard field goals in his first 10 games. I had this look the other day and I forgot to write it down. I believe tied for the most 50-plus yard field goals this year. He definitely has the most attempts, 6 of 7. He's been obviously an absolute weapon. And apparently has decided amongst the nicknames he's heard, he would like to go with Money Mac. Are we excited about this? Do we care about this? I'm not going to call the man Money Mac. I'm going to call him Evan. That's what his mama told him. So I'm not going to call him Money Mac, but I'm happy to call him Evan and reference the fact that he is a very good kicker.
Yeah, I don't like Money Mac. I think money's a little too cliche. I'm not saying it doesn't fit. He has been just that. He's been money. But I thought, because I was even thinking in my head, putting a thing out on Twitter, like, we need a nickname for Evan McPherson. I didn't realize this was already being kicked around. And I don't know. It just feels like there's something more creative out there that we are all missing. But it's not – I'm not a big fan of people picking their own nickname.
No.
He's picking from ones presented to him. So I don't have a problem. He was asked, which of these do you like best? He said Money Mac. So I guess that's what people are going to run with. I do kind of like the kick McPherson or the kick Fearson. But I think there's something better out there. I challenge listeners and readers to come up with something better. And maybe we can get him off Money Mac, because it just, I don't know, whether it's basketball players or kickers or anybody that comes up clutch, everybody uses some form of money. And I don't like that. I think it's too cliche.
And he's not Evan McPherson. He's Evan Mick. McPherson.
Money Mick.
Right. And I don't like that either. Anyway, I think that's a good thing. Our readers have been coming through in a big way. Our listeners have been coming through in a big way. So if you've got something, hit us up on Twitter. Or you can, of course, send me an email, pdaner@theathletic.com, if you've got ideas. Looks pretty good at the Bengals getting flexed in that Chargers game, as we've been talking about for, a month now, since the Baltimore game where we said that, mark it down now, that game's getting flexed out. NBC, we're recording this Tuesday morning, so you may be listening to this. It may already be announced, probably. It's basically there, NBC with a decision between Broncos at Chiefs and Bengals hosting the Chargers. It was funny, after the Sunday night game, that was a ridiculously exciting game where Justin Herbert, racks up 41 points and beating the Steelers in a crazy fourth quarter. Al Michaels and Chris Collins talking about the game, and Al Michaels goes in this whole thing about how he just loves watching this Chargers team, and they are just so much fun. And he's like, and I know people say it because I'm an LA guy or whatever, but they aren't just winning. They're doing it with style. It's entertaining. It's great TV. And I'm like, is he just basically saying, please flex the Chargers in 2 weeks? Like, I feel like he was making his own little push. And combine that with the ratings we talked about earlier in this year when Burrow and Trevor Lawrence went head to head with that big number they put up on Thursday Night Football. Both teams being in it, Denver not quite being a draw. Kansas City is, so how many times is Kansas City going to be in national? Like, how many times are you going to put Kansas City in national television? It's just over and over again. So I think the chance for something new, the way they've talked about the Chargers, it's obvious. It makes sense. We've been talking about it for over a month. We'll know for sure today. You may be listening to this and be like, yeah, Paul, I know. I already know, because we're kind of in a tough spot right now when we're recording. They haven't announced it, but we anticipate that. I'd be surprised if it wasn't.
That's really interesting what you said about Al Michaels, because I missed that game. It was on the TV, but I was sitting at a corner table in a California pizza oven in the Vegas airport writing my story. So I did not realize that Al Michaels had said that. That sounds like a tease, like a foreshadowing type of thing. So yeah, it makes sense. For the other thing is, Kansas City is already at their max for primetime games, but they're allowed to be flexed into one more. So by not doing it this week, then I haven't looked ahead to week 17 yet, but that would leave open the possibility of a Bengals Chiefs game also being flexed in week 17. But yeah, it feels, and even if it's not, if they don't go Bengals Chargers, it doesn't mean it won't be flexed. It could still be flexed into the 4 o'clock slot. Mm-hmm. It's not just primetime flexing. They can move these games all around. So I would be stunned if that game stays at 1 p.m. I feel like it's a lock. It's either going to be a 4 or an 8 o'clock game.
Yep. Jay, I know you got stats, and they're really what you're most known for, and that's sad stats.
They are. This is the Bengals have been flexed 4 times in franchise history. And so to quote a rock band that I saw recently, Daughtry, "Be careful what you wish for, because you just might get it all." The 4 times the Bengals have been flexed: 2009 season finale, Jets 37, Bengals 0. 2014, that was the season finale, Steelers 27, Bengals 17.
AJ Green concussed.
Yes, missed the playoff game. November 22nd, 2015. Cardinals 34, Bengals 31. Terrific game, but a loss in the desert. And then more recently, October 21st, 2018, Chiefs 45, Bengals 10. They have never won when they have been flexed. And Sunday Night Football in general has been a horror show. We talk all the time about how bad they've been in primetime. Sunday Night Football is the bottom of the barrel of their primetime games. They've lost 3 straight on Sunday Night Football, and they've all been flexes. Overall, they've lost 9 straight on Monday Night Football or Sunday Night Football. The last time they won on Sunday Night Football, Brian Simmons scored the team's only touchdown. Peter Warwick was the leading receiver, and Carson Palmer was making his second career start. It was a 16-13 win against Miami on September 29th, 2004. NBC didn't even have the Sunday night package then. That was still ESPN back then. So overall on Sunday Night Football, the Bengals are 3-16. Careful what you wish for, people.
But look, the Bengals have a win streak in primetime, a win streak against the Steelers. They've now have started a 1-game win streak after the bye. It's all new, Jay. It's all different. Throw it out the window. Throw all these old sad stats out the window, because this has been the year of shoving the sad stats in Jay's face. Bet against the trend is kind of the theme this year of what it has been with this team. All right, let's take a second and switch gears here and hear from a sponsor.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a 1-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. $5. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Bengals are trying to beat the Steelers for the third straight time. That last happened December 2nd, 1990. 1990. I was 10. Just turned 10. Great birthday.
I was loved a super senior at OU.
What's that?
I was a super senior at OU.
Super. Both of us having the time of our lives. I mean, it's a long time ago, and the Steelers have dominated this, and the idea that the Bengals are 4.5-point favorites to beat the Steelers for a third straight time. The last time I remember writing this and feeling like I had egg on my face for years afterwards, the last time it felt like the Bengals were finally prepared and ready to steal back the momentum in this series and really and kind of get it all going on a run of their own was in 2013. They had won a couple of games in a row. They were undefeated at home, and in December they went to Pittsburgh and lost 30-20.
And ooh, it's Kevin Huber.
Kevin Huber gets hurt, exactly. And it turns into a bad run. You mentioned the AJ Green concussion game came, and then they won a game in Pittsburgh early in 2015, 16-10. People might remember that, and then that set off the streak of a million losses in a row that they broke with the Von Bell hit game against Juju Smith-Schuster last year in December. Now you're looking for three in a row. And I feel like this is your first chance since then. Roethlisberger's going to be on his way out. They're going to have quarterback in flux as they try to figure that out. It's a miracle. I don't know how they're 5-4-1. Credit Mike Tomlin. He's always finding a way despite just dealing having nothing but scraps in front of them to put together a team with a winning record. They're very flawed, but they're better than they were before. And that sets this up with Bengals, Steelers, and Ravens, Browns as a big weekend. I want to drop these numbers on you, Jay. 538, website 538, does a lot with odds, and they have their own formulas. They have the Bengals now with a 49% chance of making the playoffs. When you look at the whole picture together, the North odds, they have Ravens at 58% chance to win, Bengals at 20, Browns at 14, Steelers at 7. This is really a chance to, I'm not going to say put the Steelers away because there's still a lot of ball game left, but get pretty close to kicking them over the cliff.
Yeah, it does. I'm surprised even that the Steelers are where they are. I really didn't think they were going to be that good this year. And it's a confusing team. It's, you know, we saw how bad their offense was when the Bengals beat them in week three. And then they go have that explosion that they had Sunday night. It's like, you know, where's that been all year? And I guess it's because they had to. They were missing so many key pieces on defense, but you don't feel like you know what that team is. And Najee Harris is really impressive. And I think that's been his development's been a big reason why this offense has kicked it in. But you look at Ben and he's doing this at such an advanced age. And you just wonder, you look at last year when they were 11-0 and they just kind of fell off the cliff toward the end of the year. Is that going to happen again? When you talk about the rookie wall all the time, well, what about the 40-year-old wall where these, a guy that is that old struggles to keep it up. I think those odds are just about spot on what I would have. Maybe the Bengals a little higher, I guess you have to wait and see if they can sweep the Ravens, but having already won that one game against the Ravens, it just, it feels like, and then being where they are now with this win against the Raiders to go 6-4, it feels like they should be a little closer. I would still put my money on the Ravens to win the division, but that seems like a bigger gap than what it should be in terms of odds.
God, and you just look at the miracle victories that the Ravens and Browns mm-hmm. pulled out and how big of a difference those made and where this stands right now. I mean, but the thing is in this line that they've been using over and over again down the stadium, which is, oh, it's all in front of us. It's all in front of us. It is. You got the Ravens on December 26th in your house. You know, stay even with them. Win when they win, lose when they lose is okay. Stay within a game of them. Get to December 26th, and you got to beat them in your house. And that's the way it should be. And then you've got the division in your hands. And, you know, with as crazy as this wild card is and is going to be, you know, because the Chargers are very good and scary with Herbert and their offense. Obviously, New England, Kansas City catching for them rising to where you thought they would be. Indianapolis is frightening right now. They're playing really good football. Their offense has been people that haven't been paying attention. But if you look at the last 6-7 weeks, their offense has been far and away the best in football. I mean, points per drive by they're in first by a mile. And they're really surging. Jonathan Taylor obviously is phenomenal. You know, what is Buffalo? Now you're like, is Buffalo even good enough to make the playoffs? But that's just going to be a lot of teams in that wild card mix. Whereas you've got a game on the Ravens. You got them coming to your house. You beat the Steelers. You beat the Ravens. You take care of business in division like you have to this point. And and the North can be yours, and you can be hosting a home game and all those things. It's just these are the games. That's why when we talked about the Baltimore win, it felt like the real moment because this was the ladder they needed to climb. Beating other teams is great, and getting yourself to the position they're in now is great, but they've got – it always has to be a climb through the North, and now when they're gunning for you and they're pissed at you, how does it look? How does it look? And we'll start to learn that on Sunday.
Yeah, because, I mean, you referenced it before. That is – it is bulletin board material. We saw that a little bit. You also referenced the last time they beat them before that long streak. That was that game it was the day after Halloween in 2015. The Bengals went 6-0, I believe it was. Vontaze Burfict came back from his suspension, or maybe it was an injury. He had been out the whole year. That was his debut, and they were only going to play him a few plays. He ended up playing a ton because he was playing so well. And that's the game that he tackled Le'Veon Bell, tore his knee up, and appeared to get up and celebrate. And we saw that rivalry get really ugly. It was already kind of ugly. It got really ugly after that, and that long losing streak followed. So I'm sure the Bengals, not that it was a dirty hit by any means, but the way they celebrated the Von Bell hit on Juju for the fumble with t-shirts and that type of thing, and then Tyler Boyd's comments about the Steelers quitting. It's the old don't poke the bear type of mentality. We will see. This again will be a test of a culture test for this team. Can they handle the success? Can they handle the role reversal where they are the hunted against a team that has been very good for a very long time? Sunday is going to be a big test in that regard. Forget that it's a division game, although that plays into some of the emotions. It's the Steelers, and they are going to be pissed.
This team has played really well feeling disrespected, underrated, back against the wall. They have not played well in the opposite. The Browns game at home is the perfect example. Mm-hmm. The Jets game, whereas, okay, how are they going to handle success? How are they going to handle being the hunted? They did not handle it well. Now we saw them go to Vegas and it felt like they learned from some things. It felt like they did get themselves back on track. They did find that momentum again and that team that they need to be, regardless of how they're being viewed. And So how will they handle? Because it is back on the word. They're back in this spot again. Can you win when you're supposed to? Can you win when people think you will? Can you win when the other team is the one feeling disrespected? And it's the Steelers. It always comes back. It's still Big Ben. It's still the Steelers. And you better believe there will be a lot of, I think the visitor podium would be an interesting one to be in front of should the Steelers find a way to beat the Bengals on Sunday, because there will be a lot of comments about quitting brought up then. That's usually when they show up. So that's all. But the thing is, the Steelers are beat up. The other, I'm going to do more research on this week. How about this, Jay? The Bengals are just so much healthier than everybody they play every week. 9 of their 11 primary offensive starters have started every game, played every game. 8 of their 11 on defense have played every game. 17 of 22? Throw in the specialists? 20 of 25? Played every game? And those that have missed have hardly missed outside of Trey Wayne's. It is unbelievable. I have never, I shouldn't say never. You've just hardly ever seen a run like this. And it's why they're so well positioned. You know, the Ravens are as beat up as any team you'll ever see. I don't know how they keep winning. The Browns are a mess. Let's run past or boot it. Who wins the North? Ravens, Bengals, and I'll combine Browns or Steelers into one.
It's easy as can be for me. I'm running with the Ravens. I still think they're the team to beat, as beat up as they are. I still think they are better positioned to finish this thing off. I'll pass on the Bengals and I'll boot the other two. The Browns, Baker Mayfield is not healthy, not close to it. And if he can't go, they're not going to the playoffs with Case Keenum. As terrific as that roster is, it's just not going to happen. And the Steelers, it just feels like are in for another cliff fall, regardless of what happens Sunday. They could come in and beat the Bengals, and it's not going to change my mind about them. I still think that they are destined to finish last in this division. So it's that the boot is an easy one. The run is a little tougher. But as far as placing them in order, it seems easy. It's Ravens, Bengals, and then boot Steelers / Browns.
I think the Browns are more likely to finish in last. They are. We've talked so much every day, basically, about the culture in the locker room and being together and responding to adversity. And there's been zero cracks in this Bengals locker room, zero cracks in the Ravens, even as they get all the injuries. I can't even keep track of the cracks anymore in Cleveland. Like, there was Beckham, and then there was Jarvis Landry, and now Baker Mayfield's girlfriend or whatever he snubs the media because he was too emotional, because it sounded like he knew he was going to go rip everybody, and his girlfriend's posting like, hey, y'all need to look at yourself about who's really tough around here. It just feels like it is all falling apart. It is House of Cards time in Cleveland right now inside of that locker room, and you better have it together over these next month and a half inside of your locker room, because it is going to be a grinder to try to get into the playoffs in the AFC right now. I don't think there's just too, they're as broken as Baker Mayfield is, and both of those things are a problem. And the Steelers, as bad as they've been, at least they kind of still have this feeling of still being the Steelers a little bit. And some, you're not seeing the mess that you're seeing in Cleveland. So I would be more worried about the Steelers coming from off the mat than I think I am the Browns, even though the Browns came into this place and won 41-16 or whatever. And I still think that the Steelers have a lot to be worried about in the long haul. But I'm with you. Yeah, I would still go Ravens, Bengals, Browns, Steelers. But you know what? It all changes real quick. It all can change really quickly in 1 week, and specifically this week. Jay, you've got a few different stats that I wanted to give you a chance to flaunt, brag about. You had stats about fewest penalties, and we talked about this the other day, but I don't think people realize how disciplined this Bengals team has been at not hurting themselves. It's painfully obvious when you watch a Raiders team that is the exact opposite of that, that just does the dumb things that gets teams beat over and over again. We've seen Bengals teams do that a lot in the past. But what are your Jay's stats? And happy stats.
Yeah, well, first of all, let's talk about the Raiders, because what I did, I went back. The stats on penalties only go back to 2000 and on both of our True Media and Sport Radar, the two sites we use. So I was looking at, you know, the fewest stats in it, or the stats from the fewest penalties and fewest penalty yards in a season. And, you know, naturally, if you're going to look at the fewest, you got to take a peek at the most. And four of the five highest totals for most penalties in a year belong to the Raiders. It's just year after year after year, they seem to be in that category. And they were again, they just hurt themselves on Sunday against the Bengals. The Bengals, on the other hand, have the fewest penalties in the league and they have the fewest penalty yards. And what's interesting there is like, you think that's a good thing, right? I mean, yeah, you don't want to commit penalties, but it's almost, I was like, I wonder if it's kind of a nice guys finish last type of thing. How much does that actually correlate to playoff success? And I went back the last 10 years, and last year, for instance, only two of the 10 least penalized teams made the playoffs. Hmm. And then the year before that, it was 5-5-4, 5-5-3. It's never an overwhelming thing that correlates to success, fewest penalties and playoffs. But still, I don't think anybody's going to say that it's a bad thing not to have penalties, because they're going to hurt you no matter when they come. And so to be where they're at is a good sign. But the last time that the Bengals led the league in fewest penalty yards and they were tied for second in fewest penalties was 2016. And that was not a good team. So again, it's something that I think the Bengals are proud of. I think it's been a focus for Zach Taylor, but it's not necessarily something that's going to guarantee success. But still, no one's going to thumb their nose at being a league leader in fewest penalties and fewest penalty yards.
It's not a winning stat necessarily, but you're right. It's still something that you'd rather be on one side than the other. And specifically when you're so often that you are not the team killing yourself, it does make a difference. But yeah, I mean, you know, you'd be better off having a good quarterback and an undisciplined team than the opposite. Mm-hmm. But still, it's pretty remarkable how they've found themselves there. You also, in final thoughts, had sudden change stats that I just think are amazing. And I know you mentioned it the other day after the game. It is remarkable how good this defense has been coming off turnovers now. I think I tweeted during the game. It's no longer a small sample size because of the generosity of the offense and putting their defense in these spots over and over again. But the defense, you just don't see things like this. A defense that every single time outside of one, has found a way to minimize the damage.
Yeah, I wanted to look up to see where they ranked in points off turnovers. And when you do that, it counts pick sixes. So they've given up 40 points. Technically, they've only given up 25 points, the offense in quick change situations, because there was the two pick sixes and one of the pick sixes came with a 2-point conversion. It still is remarkable that not just that they're not allowing turnovers, the Bengals defense isn't allowing offensive turnovers to turn into touchdowns, but where these drives have started. I mean, three of these have been inside the 10-yard line. They have put the defense right back out there in a first and goal situation, and none of them have resulted in touchdowns. The only one that resulted in touchdown was the one we talked about at New York, the blind throw intercepted. The Jets start at the Bengals 14, and then they go right in and score. But a lot of these other ones, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, eight of the other ones have started in Bengals territory. And not only are they not allowing touchdowns, in some cases they're not allowing points. They're either getting the ball back on downs, they're answering with a turnover of their own, or in one case at Green Bay, it was part of that comedic series of missed field goals. It's just, it has been really remarkable. And it was interesting too, because Sam Hubbard and Lou Anarumo both used the line that we're the fire department. We come in to put the fire out. Doesn't matter how it started. It's our job to put it out. So that feels like a Lou thing that Sam was kind of parroting, even though Sam was the first one to say it yesterday. But it's been ongoing all year. It started in Chicago. They had three times in Chicago they went out there in quick change situations, and once they forced a punt, and twice they gave up field goals, and it's carried through the rest of the season.
Yeah, and it'd be nice if the offense didn't keep putting them in those spots, but it is good to know that really, and that's how a team that has been so bad in turnover differential, you know, those teams that rank in the 20s in turnover differential don't have winning records. Like, it's just not something that really happens. But that is the only way you overcome it, is you have a defense that just over and over again minimizes the damage of those. And so the defense has really been the one that has been saving that killer stat, really the one area that the Bengals have just been repeatedly, problematic. All right, let's just take a quick break. Let's go to Mo Egger. It's time to bring in our good friend from ESPN 1530. We got to talk about his tweets. There's stuff to talk about. So let's dive in.
The worst person to go to Vegas with is the person who's like, hey, let's take a side trip to Hoover Dam. And then there's Jay at Hoover Dam. So...
All right, now is that time to bring in our good friend from ESPN 1530, Mo Egger, and talk to him about his tweets. I'm kind of a little disappointed in your tweets this week, Mo.
I've noticed this is gaining traction, because I've sent some tweets where people have been like, oh, Paul and Jay, you're going to have something to say about this.
It's true. I will say your Bengals tweets were rather subdued, really kind of, I think maybe at the tone of the game of when it just kind of blew itself out a little bit, it was really just kind of a little bit of a matter of fact reaction from you. And I'm proud of you for that.
Well, the first half of that game felt like I tweeted this. The first half of that game felt like, at least watching on TV, like it was being played in August.
Yeah.
I mean, it for 2-5-4 teams that are playoff hopefuls, it didn't have a watching it on the tube. It didn't have the big game feel, and I didn't like the way the Bengals played in the first half, but I wasn't mad about it, and I never really felt like they were going to lose the game. I felt that way when Vegas made it 16-13, and you wrote about it. It felt like the whole game, and to a degree the season, was hinging on what the Bengals did next, and they had the touchdown drive, and it was great. But yeah, I mean, it was... I thought they were going to win the game. To me, they were supposed to win the game. They didn't play great, and they did win the game. But there was nothing like exceptionally, like, overly tweet-worthy, I guess.
Well, Jay, first of all, do you have Mo's tweets from last week?
I do. It was a bump from last week. It was 108. Still not anywhere near as high, but an increase.
An average week for you.
Average week for me on the social
media? Yeah,
not bad. Okay,
And maybe you tweet a little less when teams are winning more.
isn't that sort of how it works?
I think that's how, Twitter, when the negative things happen is when the tweets start rolling through, like nobody's business. But I wanted to say, I'll start with this. I want to say that Jay and I both kind of subtweeted you a little bit this weekend.
I noticed. Really.
Yeah. And I hope you don't feel attacked.
Well, no, I don't. But let's start with Jay's. Jay's mentioned Sammy Hagar. And for the record, in the Van Halen versus Van Hagar debate, I'm team Hagar. But Jay was excited. I know he's a hard rock guy. I get it. It's a cool halftime show. The setup looked neat. It's not on the field. It's on this little stage, I guess, in the end zone. But he said this is better than Monkeys Riding Dogs, which I think is the greatest halftime show in the history of halftime shows. It's better than Quick Change. It's better than Red Panda. It's better than any marching band. It's the greatest thing I've ever seen. I've not anticipated anything more than the game. I think it was on a Thursday in 2015 when the monkey rode the dog, because it also happened in 2013 when the Bengals played the Vikings. And I think they clinched the AFC North that day. And I felt attacked. And so I saw the tweet And I felt like coming back at Jay, but then I didn't want to get into this whole like Sammy Hagar discussion because I like Sammy Hagar, like Van Halen. That would have been a cool show to see. But also, The Monkey Riding the Dog is the greatest halftime show ever. And I just, I felt as somebody who I think is, everybody knows that that's the halftime show of choice for me, I felt a little aimed at. I felt like I got jabbed by Jay.
Well, no, sometimes context gets lost in tweets. I mean, imagine that.
Does it?
But
really?
I wasn't saying like Sammy Hagar is at the top of the list and Monkeys Riding Dogs Herding Sheep was at the bottom. I really like Monkeys Riding Dogs Herding Sheep as well. But I was just saying, if you're looking at what's near the top of the list, this one even goes way beyond that. And then someone else tweeted back and they're right. Like, Mascot Kids Football is just in a league by itself. That will never, ever be topped.
I don't know. Everyone knows my love for Mascot Football. We play fantasy Mascot Football when they play at halftime at the Bengals game. It's one of my favorite days of the year. I love it. That said, I think I'm with Mo. I still would go with the dogs and the monkeys and the sheep. The one that is underrated as someone who has traveled and was and still in disbelief and excited to see what happens in a few weeks is when Denver did mutton busting. If you're familiar with it, they send these kids out on these animals, and these animals run across the field trying to buck them off, and they basically toss these little kids. It's a real thing. You can look it up on the internet. And it was one of the craziest things that I couldn't believe was legal in the United States, much less played in front of 70,000 people in Denver. I hope mutton busting happens again in Denver this year, because that actually is the number one just for the sheer shock value of it.
This is exclusive to Denver. This is not a traveling.
It's the only place I think it's a thing in Denver. I have never seen nor heard of it anywhere else.
Interesting. Okay.
But keep that in mind. I guess we can, now that we've done that. I mean, what? All right, Mo, thanks for joining us. This was a good discussion.
Well, I got subtweeted by you, Paul, in your
piece
about the drive.
Well, you have mentioned in the past that it does seem that you are showing up a lot in my stories lately. And so I didn't mention you this time as I did the previous couple of times where I actually wrote your name. And so I just pointed out that some people really scream at the TV on second and long and when they run the ball. And it happened to be a sort of a dedication to the run moment that really paid off for him in this game. And maybe those people for one time maybe weren't yelling as loudly about it.
On the second and nine play at the 38, Mixon ran it for 19 yards, and it was one of the critical plays in that entire touchdown drive. And it was great, and it worked, and it was awesome. And I love the fact that they stayed with the run in the second half because it wasn't that effective in the first half. But I mean, I'm not the only person who doesn't like,
I don't know. No.
Second and long run plays. I mean,
that's why it wasn't directly at you. You're a leader of the group. You're kind of at the front of the people that like to talk about this.
Yeah.
I don't like it either.
No. I mean, by the way, you see when they beat USF, one of the key plays in that game was a 3rd and 20 run that gained 18 yards. And then they went for it on 4th and 2 and got it. And my colleagues in the broadcast booth, I felt like they were a little bit more excited about that 3rd and 20 run play working because they could almost feel me steaming in the background when the ball was handed off. So, no, look, it worked, and good for Zach, good for the Bengals, good for me. But yeah, I felt like that was a little jab at me, and that's okay. I could take it. I'm a big boy.
You are a big boy. And I would say I felt like there was really, and this was right on, and we all fell into the trap. What I'm going to start with you was your tweet from 6:49 on Sunday. Okay. And it was, I believe you'll see descriptors like tough, gritty, and hard fought applied to today's Bengals victory. Maybe some Vegas and gambling references and puns too. I tried my best not to, but there were still even then points. Jay went full on craps opener and kicker, which I actually enjoyed. with a very specific reference to the shooter winning, everybody wins, which I really enjoyed in your story. But, you know, I felt like that was pointing out where we all inevitably would go with our coverage of that game.
You know, I may not have done that had they not had the crap celebration, but I figured the crap celebration just played. Mm-hmm. It was number one. It was Joe. He was the point of the story. And so I felt like I had to do that. I know a lot of editors, if there's a big storm, they don't want people using weather related leads. And if there's a holiday, they don't want holiday related leads. And I was going to try to stay away from Vegas, but then I just couldn't. Once they pulled out that end zone celebration, I had to go that way.
Well, credit to you for not dropping the Hoover Dam in there, because they wanted you to. Everybody after the game, how many breaking dam references could we possibly get? And for no one to go Hoover, at least that I have seen in the posting coverage, I thought was excellent discipline by the media contingent of all of us.
Well, we had an immense amount of fun on the air last week because Zach Taylor in his media session with you guys talked about playing craps, which I love craps. To me, it's the most fun game to play because for the most part, when you win, there's other people who are winning. A bad player can't screw it up for somebody else. But there's also like the first time you've ever even thought about playing craps and you're like, all right, I'm going to learn this game. There's nothing more intimidating. And then we started talking about Vegas. And then I said, the worst person to go to Vegas with is the person who's like, hey, let's take a side trip to Hoover Dam. And then there's Jay at Hoover Dam. So. And then we started making fun of Hoover Dam and that side trip, which I have taken before. So I enjoyed that. But yeah, I mean, first of all, the game itself, it was one of those that's sort of, you know, didn't bring about a lot of the, I don't know, descriptors of that we've used to talk about this team so far. It was sort of a gnarly, ugly game. It had the feel for most of the afternoon of just score one more point than them and get out of here and move on and come home and play 5 year next seven. And so I know me, then I typically default to, boy, all right, hard fought win, gritty, tough. And I'm like, yeah, that's what everybody's going to use to describe this game. Oh, and by the way, they're in Vegas and there was the crab celebration and Zach Taylor talked about playing craps and it's their first time in Vegas. So you sort of have to, like, you know, pull those Vegas puns and descriptors off the shelf. And so it worked, I guess.
It's so easy. There's so many correlations.
Right.
But next, the question is, what happens next time? Do we go back in again? Like, are we, at what point is the statute of limitations run out? Like, okay, now just no one's allowed to reference Vegas puns. That's why I feel for like the people that in the Kansas City and the Denver Riders now, they're like, we're going there every year. Am I always going to be dropping how many times am I going to be talking about the Hoover Dam?
Well, you know, at some point there's going to be like a coach gambles for it and they goes for it on 4th and 8 and it doesn't work. And, you know, then it's going to be like, oh, Sean McVay, he doubled down and he went to Vegas and he gambled and he lost. And now it's that sad flight home. What happens when you go to Vegas? Like they're not going to stop as long as that team is in Las Vegas. But yeah, I mean, it worked. It worked because you're right. They rolled the dice. And then the people that I was watching the game with are like, well, what are they doing? I'm like, they're playing dice in the end zone. Then I had to explain it. So, but yeah, you know, I was heartened that Jay, you went that route and it was appropriate and it was good.
Yeah. I think it's one and done. I think this is that was it. But that next trip there, it has to be played straight. It was curious. There were some, you know, every time you go in these post game press conferences, there's people from the home city, you know, sidebar guys or whatever that go into the visiting team press conference. And there were guys in there asking, Bengals players about coming to Vegas and the traps and all that. And I'm like, it's week 10. Have they not done this story already? Or are they just asking every single team that comes here the challenges and they're doing like this big long piece? I was really surprised to see the Vegas writers taking that angle.
I did enjoy other players referencing that they had to keep an eye on Tyler Boyd. Like, 'cause every friend group has that guy who, like, you know, you got to watch. Right.
Right.
And I love that everyone's acknowledging that Tyler Boyd is that guy, which I think anybody that follows him on Instagram is well aware of.
You know, this was fun to watch on social media because there were a lot of Bengals fans who made the trip and it looked awesome. But in my little circle of friends, I have people who went to the game And the folks that I thought were going to make fools of themselves in Vegas apparently did. And the people who I didn't think were going to make fools of themselves in Vegas didn't. So I've enjoyed that. But this struck me as like the trip that I wanted to avoid, because I want to go like the third or fourth time they play when it's sort of old hat. You know, that to me is that. But yeah, it looked like Bengals fans took over the city. It looked like they had a lot of fun. And apparently, because I asked on Twitter yesterday, I'm like, look, I forget the Vegas part of it. Just tell me about the stadium and the game and and getting in and out and all that stuff. And people seem to really love the stadium. I guess there were issues with COVID vaccinations and verifying that hampered some people, but it seemed like folks who just enjoyed the game really did enjoy the game and really enjoyed the stadium and looked like a cool place to go.
Well, I'm going to get you out of here on this with one more that actually isn't a specific tweet, but it's one that really, maybe it was thematic. The one that you referenced many times during the week, and it's not style points, which I have appreciated that you are all in on that. Is there a game that you have been documenting on Twitter yet that you have not referenced style points at the end? I'm not sure, but there's
what's the limitation on that? Like when we get to baseball season, I mean, am I still going to be tweeting about style points?
I think you might actually. I think maybe mid May.
Yeah.
here is basically one that you have in many different forms, and it is, I'm having fun. And I like this because I don't know what it must be like to be a radio host in this city and be so used to the constant themes. And now here we are, and all these teams are winning.
Yeah.
Very odd. It's very hard to know how to feel.
This is why I got into the business. This is why I got into sports talk radio, to talk about teams I care about winning and enjoy them with people. And as hokey as that sounds, I mean, that's you don't get into people. There's a misnomer about our sort of industry that, oh, it's great when everybody's angry. No, it's not, because when people get angry, then they get apathetic and they go and find something else. I don't enjoy it when they lose. I don't enjoy talking about coaching changes and why fans aren't going and what can be done to resuscitate this program or what can be done to fix this team. I enjoy talking about games and winning and what can be done to make teams better and what can be done to improve a team's chances and things that people enjoy. And I enjoy it when there's people who don't pay attention when the teams are losing that come to the party when they're winning. I mean, I say all the time, don't stiff arm bandwagon fans, welcome them. I certainly, in my business, we have to, right? Because not everybody's a diehard. There are casual fans whose attention spans kind of come and go based on how the teams are doing. And when they're doing well, they come to the party. And so, yeah, I'm thoroughly enjoying this Bengals season because they matter. I mean, God knows the last 6 years, 5 years, whatever it's been, by the time we've gotten to November, nobody is scrutinizing play calling and strategy and personnel usage and really looking at the upcoming opponent. It's all about, why are you still going to games? And are the Bengals going to move? And should they fire this guy? And who are they going to draft in 6 months? And there's a place for all that, but that gets really boring and tiresome. And this doesn't. And then, you know, the UC part of it is so different and new. And you've kind of had to remind people, like, you know, this is really fun and cool and unique, and it might not ever happen again. So, yeah, I remember in 2009 with UC and Paul, I think you were covering the Bearcats then. I don't recall specifically. Yep. But I remember in 2009, they had a terrific team, man. And in November, it was abundantly clear Brian Kelly was going to have at least a really good chance to go to Notre Dame. And I remember often saying, like, let him go to Notre Dame. Who cares? Look at the team you have. Like, take at least some of your time and energy and channel it into a group of players that you'll say got mistreated when and if Brian leaves. So give them your attention, celebrate this, enjoy this, because this might not ever happen again. And I feel something to a similar degree about UC. Like, all right, so if the committee doesn't love them or if the committee screws them, well, okay, that shouldn't compromise your joy. That shouldn't compromise how much you're into this team. But now, you know, it really sort of gets real. They got to win these next two games, and I think they're going to be tough games. And, you know, the Oregon thing kind of opened the door where now you're not quite paying as close attention to some of the stuff happening beyond UC as you were before Oklahoma and Oregon lost. But yeah, I mean, this is a lot of fun, man, you know, and it's fun for me. I hope as much as we just expect the other shoe to drop and expect the worst and sometimes watch these teams with great apprehension, I hope there's an appreciation for, you know, again, the Bengals matter now, man. Are they great? Are they going to make the postseason? I think they will, but there's something about your team mattering that I hope people appreciate, because I do. And from what I do for a living, you could just, we talk about football now. And when they're bad and we get to November and December, we're really not talking about football. And I got into this business to talk about football games and basketball games and baseball games. And you don't do that as much when the teams are bad, and you certainly don't do it with as many people.
Have you allowed yourself to think about this, that, because you got in this, you said you got into this to talk about teams you love.
Mm-hmm.
What this weekend will be like, not this weekend, the weekend that I'm about to reference, will be like for you. Friday, December 31st, New Year's Eve, UC versus Ohio State in the college football playoff. No. Saturday, January 1st, UC versus Tulane to go 14-0. And then Sunday, January 2nd, Bengals versus Chiefs with a chance to clinch the AFC North Division. Could you handle that weekend?
No. I don't know that the people in my life could handle me that well. is UC beating Ohio State on the 31st? Because I get 48 hours, if that were to be the case, to be not responsible for my behavior. But isn't it fun to think about weekends like that? Isn't it fun to think about those scenarios? Isn't it fun to put yourself in that position where you're like, holy crap, I'm watching UC play Ohio State in a game that matters, or wow, you know, Joe Burrow versus Patrick Mahomes with a chance to, you know, lock down a playoff bid or inch closer to a playoff bid. You know, the UC basketball team, which is, you know, of everybody that I root for, my absolute favorite, who would have thought, as we talked this morning, this team would look like it might matter this year. Nobody. I'll be honest with you. The UC ECU game terrifies me. And I've said it for weeks, mm-hmm. because it's a weird place to play. It's a veteran quarterback who's had success against Cincinnati before. It's a short week. It's a holiday. They're 11-0. There's a really good chance they're in the top four when they go there. The target has never been bigger. That game just scares the crap out of me. So I've tried not to look beyond that one too much, because boy, the worst thing is, you know, you assume you're going to make it. You assume, hey, they're going to play Houston, be 12-0, and then they lay an egg at ECU, and they haven't played on the road. They haven't played great on the road recently. But yeah, I mean, that 3-day stretch would be insane. I haven't even thought about that. That would be ridiculous.
You get to think about great weekends like that, and you get to think about weekends like going to Greenville, your favorite place on earth.
On Thanksgiving. traveling on Thanksgiving to Greenville.
Greenville on Thanksgiving. It just, you know, it really is a count your blessings type of moment. Hashtag blessed. You know,
there's a lot of cities, because we are traveling on Thanksgiving. There's a lot of cities, including ours, where you could kind of search restaurants open on Thanksgiving. And there are some. And part of me hopes none of them are, because I think it'd be cool if the workers didn't have to work on Thanksgiving. But at the same time, I'm in a strange city. I want to eat. I want to have Thanksgiving. I don't want to sit in my hotel room eating Chex Mix. So there are major cities where it's like, oh yeah, we're open on Thanksgiving. Here are the hours. Here's what we have. In Greenville, there's not really so much of that. So,
I hope you enjoy it and have a very happy holiday. And I look forward to tweets from that experience being referenced here next week when you come back.
So we were in Thanksgiving in Tulsa in 2016. It was the day before Tommy Tuberville's what ended up being his last game. And we found an establishment that was open. The guy would not open his kitchen because he just wanted to open his bar to get away from his family. And I needed to not be in that hotel because Tommy Tuberville hated me. And so I'm like, look, I will go anywhere. I'll go anywhere to not be in this hotel. I don't want to be in this room, but I also don't want to be in this hotel because Tubbs was out to get me. I didn't want to talk to him. It was over for him. And so I found refuge in this bar with this man who served me pretzels and beer, and we watched the Colts play the Steelers, and it was fun. So this year I don't have to worry about the coach hating me, I don't think.
Maybe you can go back there. Maybe you can go back there on Thanksgiving.
Tulsa, and this is Greenville. And just saying that makes me so happy they're leaving that conference.
Mo, it's been great. We will we'll talk to you next week.
Okay, guys. Thank you.
All right. Good to catch up with Mo.
I know he's going to enjoy Greenville for Thanksgiving. He's just he just really can't dial up anything better than that. You have to update the growler bet from this past weekend. The growler bet was you had to pick one of three: Joe Burrow touchdown, a Joe Burrow sack, or a Joe Burrow interception. Which one will happen, and what will the time of game be? And which one will happen first? What will time of game be? And it ended up being 12-14 in the first quarter. You had the sack fumble by the Raiders of Burrow. Jay, you and I, when we plotted this, I pointed out that you were being kind of mean and didn't really want people to have a good chance to win. And I suggested it be 10-second differential. And you suggested 5 in either direction. And we went with you because, you know, that's just, if you want to be mean, then you could be mean. I think Kent Hansen's not super thrilled about that. Kent Hansen had sack at 12:21, off by 7 seconds. So close, so close. But yet so far, I mean, look, Kent, I wanted you to win. I wanted to give Kent some delicious 50 West beer. Jay did not. Jay wanted Kent to be thirsty this holiday season and to have to wonder what could have been.
If you want to give beer away that bad, give it to me. I made the rules.
You've gotten enough. You've gotten enough, Jay. That's enough. Okay. that's recapping this past week's growler bet. Now, I've been saying every time that you do the growler bet, who won in the growler bet between the two of us?
Because we both picked Burrow TD, so I just called it a draw.
Okay.
I mean, you had 10-12 of the second quarter for a Burrow TD, and I had 10-01 of the first quarter for a Burrow TD. It's really, since the sack happened first, I just called that a draw. So you still lead 5-4 for the year.
Still lead 5-4. It has been pointed out to me that we know that you like to use palindromes for all of your answers in the growler bet. And I always feel like I don't have a thing. I need a thing. Man, you listeners just keep giving back. Shout out Dale Drummond, who says, you know what you need? You need prime numbers.
Oh, there we go.
I have the list of all the prime numbers, so I am fully prepared to go prime numbers on you from now until the end of time. Hopefully.
I was going to say, like,
we get into some where, like, passer ratings and things are going to be hard, but yeah. I can find ways to make it work. Don't worry about that. Don't you worry about me.
Well, you can still, if it's a passer rating, you just make the decimal point always 0.7.
0.0.
Or 0.0 or 0.1. Those are all prime numbers.
Yeah, don't you worry about me. I'm excited to be prime number guy now. Thanks to Dale for that idea. I'm loving it. All right. We will be, of course, back in Thanksgiving for everybody. We will still have a Steelers preview episode for you coming up. And then we'll have the walkout on Sunday. I hope everybody has a great Thanksgiving, but you'll be hearing from us. So when you're on your way, driving to the family deal, wherever you're going, you can plop in, hear that podcast ground and take a listen. And a reminder, if you have not, great time to subscribe. The time to subscribe, really. $1 a month for the next 12 months. Deal we got going on now, Black Friday. Get it. If you're not a subscriber, this is when you should do it. There's no doubt. Or give gifts. It's a great time to give a gift subscription to somebody that you think would love the site if you love it too. So just want to mention that to everybody. And if you do, you can go read my I wrote 1,200 words on the fake flea flicker because the story was so good. I had to ask. I talked to Zach Taylor about it, and the story was exponentially better than I ever could have imagined. So I said, screw it. I'm writing 1,200 words on an 8-yard gain.
Should have been more.
I really could have been more.
No. The gain should have been more because Joe slipped.
Ah, that's the kicker of the story, Jay.
Okay.
All that for a slip.
But anyway, if you can go and read that story, and I'm still laughing over the absurdity of how it all came down. And really a life lesson in that story is never miss an October Purdue Rutgers game. Never. There's your motto. That's what I'll leave that as a teaser if you want to go read the story too. So anyway. All right, thanks, Wade, for listening, and we will talk to you on Thanksgiving. Have a good one.